You're listening to the WP Tonic, WordPress and Tech, focused on building a successful business in WordPress aimed at the WordPress professional and power user. Join Jonathan Denwood and Kurt Von Annen as your host and co-host as we bring you great discussions from around the globe.
Welcome back, folks, to the WP Tonic Show. This is episode 948. In this episode, we're going to be talking about accessibility, WordPress, Gutenberg, other platforms, how do they rate when it comes to accessibility in 2025. We've got a real expert on the subject. We've got Steve Jones, the CTO of Equalize Digital, with us, one of the leading WordPress agencies in the area of accessibility and consultation. Should be a great show. So, Steve, can you just give us a quick 10, 20-second intro and we'll go into more depth about your background in the main part of the show?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to be here, Jonathan. Thanks for having me on. Like Jonathan said, my name is Steve Jones. I'm the CTO of Equalize Digital. We are an accessibility services and product company. We're the makers of the WordPress plugin called the Accessibility Checker.
That's fantastic. And I've got my great co-host, Kirk. He has returned from his wanderings, his speakership in Las Vegas. He looks relaxed. I'll soon sort that out, tribe. Don't worry. Kirk, would you like to quickly introduce yourself to the tribe?
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan. My name is Kurt Von Annen. I own an agency called Mañana No Más, and we focus largely on membership and learning websites, as well as working directly with WP Tonic and the great folks at Lifter LMS.
And Steve's been a champ. I had a total brain fart last week. I sent him an email, are you coming on the show? And he pointed out to me it was going to be the following week. I had one of my regular brain farts, but thanks for taking that. Well, Steve, like I say, it should be a great discussion. But before we go into the main meat and potatoes of the show, I've got a great message and offer from one of our major sponsors. We will be back in a few moments, folks.
Hi there, e-commerce store owner. At Omnisend, we help more than 100,000 e-commerce customers just like you sell their products. We're an all-in-one email and SMS marketing platform that helps you reach your customers, grow your audience, and increase sales. In fact, our customers have seen incredible results with Omnisend, averaging $72 in revenue for every single dollar spent. And if you ever have a question, our award-winning customer support team is available 24/7 every single day. That's one of the reasons we have more than 6,000 glowing reviews and ratings all across the web. So get started with Omnisend today and start growing your business with better email and SMS marketing.
We're coming back, folks. I also want to point out before we go into the great conversation that we've got a great created list of the best WordPress plugins and services, plus some great special offers. You can get all these goodies aimed at the WordPress professional by going over to wp-tonic.com/deals. wp-tonic.com/deals. What more could you ask for, my beloved professionals? Probably a lot more, but that's all you got to get from that page. I'm sorry to disappoint. I've made a career of it. Steve, you're supposed to laugh, Steve.
Yeah, okay. I'm laughing on the inside.
Yeah, there we go. You won't. You'll be crying soon. Steve, how did you get into the world of web development, web design and consultancy? And then how did it lead to being the CTO of Equalize Digital?
Sure. So it kind of goes back quite a bit, and I might age myself a little bit here, but...
Well, you're much younger than me. Everybody's younger than me, Steve.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah, so like... I started dabbling in web development in the late 90s, kind of got serious about it in the early 2000s. I actually obtained a college degree in graphic design and then quickly pivoted from that over into development. I worked for a number of agencies, of course, starting out as a designer and then around 2004, I think I switched over to becoming a developer for a time. For about 5 years, I ran my own development agency, kind of a little solo deal. I started working with WordPress in 2007, around version 2. Accessibility came to the forefront when I was working for a company called Road Warrior Creative, which is actually the company that became Equalize Digital. So we had procured a set of clients in the government and higher education space, and thus so they have accessibility requirements that they have to meet, and they have to be compliant with the WCAG guidelines, and which that required us as a team to study those WCAG guidelines and me on the technical side to learn how to develop and remediate websites for accessibility issues or develop from an accessibility first standpoint. So that led to us reincorporating the business. The three of us, Amber Hines, Chris Hines, and I co-founded Equalize Digital. And I think it was very early 2022. And and although Equalize Digital was a DBA of the other agency for a little while, but we officially rebranded and I came in as a equal co-owner of the company at that time. And through that, we created our WordPress plugin called the Accessibility Checker, which is it's a accessibility scanner that sits inside of your poster page. So if you're on the edit page the edit screen of a page or a post, you can see at the bottom your scan results. It'll scan your page right there as you're editing and updating. It can highlight accessibility. You can click over and highlight accessibility issues on the front end of the website. It runs more than 45 different checks. It also will go further and actually fix some issues for you too. So we have 14 automated fixes inside the plugin to help you meet some of those WCAG guidelines, and has full site scanning and can run an audit history. So if you want to track your accessibility compliance over time, the plugin can kind of track that and you can see progress over time. And it has much more features than that, but that's kind of the quick rundown of how I got into all this.
Right, that's fantastic. Over to you, Kurt.
I feel like the rest of the questions are going to be a fog for the listener if we don't kind of like just ask accessibility, because I talk to different people in the industry and some people are like, oh yeah, you can run a plugin, it'll inspect your site and give you some of the stuff to do. And then I talk to other people that are like, well, you know, for six figures a month, yeah, you know, we can manage and oversee, and because they'll describe accessibility as this thing like there's the goalposts are always moving, it's always changing, you never know if you're compliant or not.
Yeah.
And that's a really difficult conversation to have with beginners in our field, but also professionals, because if you're building sites for corporations, who's really on the hook for the lawsuit when it comes in?
Right.
So can we kind of have that chat?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'll say is, the goalpost doesn't really move as fast as we would think it does. The WCAG guidelines actually moves at a snail's pace, and we're being WCAG 2.2 AA compliant. That's kind of what most of institutions have to strive for, right? And it really does not; those guidelines don't change very fast at all. To speak to what you said about cost and can an automated tool really solve all of your issues, right? Like, so the accessibility checker is a scanner, and there's other ones besides ours. You could search the WordPress repo for other ones. Ours is a little more full featured than most, but we have a free plugin, right? And all those checks and all those fixes are included in our free plugin. And that's kind of our part of supporting accessibility, you know, before profit, right? Like, we want people to make their stuff accessible. And we want to be able to give that subset that can't afford that huge cost to run an audit remediation plan with a huge agency. Like you said, they cost $100,000 or whatnot, right? So we're trying to expand accessibility and make the tool itself accessible to everybody, even regardless of economic factors. Now what I will say is that an automated tool can only find what can be automated. So like, this can differ on different websites, but like the percentage, it could be 20-30%, right? So it's 20-30% an automated tool can find, right? But then there is a vast percentage that has to be manually tested. And those issues have to be found by somebody, whether it's you as a developer or a content specialist that have educated yourself in accessibility, or like you said, a professional agency that will go in and do, that has the team to go in and do a professional audit, like Equalize. And, you know, we have on staff auditors and remediators that will help you bring you to compliance. But as you stated, that does come with a certain cost.
Nice, nice. And then to get us kind of back on track with the interview, where do we stand in WordPress in comparison to like other platforms, Wix, Squarespace, Webflow? How do we stand stacked up as WordPress professionals against those platforms?
Sure. So I will give a little bit of a caveat that I am primarily a WordPress guy. Excuse me, I got a little bit of a scratch in my throat. Got a cold. But so I work primarily in WordPress, but we do look at other platforms and we have talked about some other platforms. We have a podcast called Accessibility Craft where we talk about these things sometimes. But for WordPress, I think WordPress is the most flexible in terms of accessibility because it's so open. And you as a developer can actually go in and fix things. You have access to all the code to be able to modify and change. You can even modify core, or you can even submit a patch to core. And if you contact the accessibility team and say, hey, you know, this isn't accessible in core, can you fix it? Or here's a patch. It's not that hard to get it in. So the community actually helps support some of these accessibility efforts.
Well, I thought they had been removed.
The accessibility team? No, I don't believe so.
I thought they had, all right.
Yeah, I think you're thinking about the sustainability team.
Yes. Oh, yes. All these titles. Yes. Sorry. Right. Gets a bit confusing, Steve, especially when you get older, Steve.
Yeah, that's right. So the accessibility team is still there and still doing great work. But so kind of the flip side of being so open and flexible in WordPress is that WordPress depends very heavily on themes and plugins and developer knowledge, right? So if those things are lacking, or if there's not a lot of checks and balances or, you know, review of themes and plugins going into the repo from an accessibility standpoint, then that could present a huge problem, because WordPress is very accessible to people that are not developers, right? So if you introduce a theme and it makes it through review and it's got accessibility issues, and now there is, in the theme repo, there is an accessibility flag. So there's a tag that you can filter those by accessible themes. Doesn't necessarily mean that they're fully accessible. It just means that they've met the criteria that the accessibility team has set forward for accessible themes. So the flip side of that are kind of these more closed platforms, right? So like Wix and Squarespace and Webflow and Wix, you know, Wix is a controlled, closed environment, right? So you have limit to accessibility fixes. If you're in there and you've done some, education on accessibility and you're like, well, this really isn't accessible. This, you know, this div or whatever should be a button. You really can't change it. Like, you can maybe submit a ticket to the Wix team, but most likely it's not going to get fixed, or it's not going to get fixed in any timely manner. So, but Wix does have some accessibility, like they do, like what Gutenberg does now is they will have automatic color contrast checking, things like that, to kind of like alert you, hey, these two colors aren't really readable for people with lower vision or color blindness, things like that. I think Squarespace is similar to Wix in that regard. And I think with both of those two being a closed platform, what we've seen a little bit is that they can, I want to say this with as nicely as I can. So like they're tout their Google Lighthouse accessibility scores, which we don't really think that Lighthouse is the best accessibility.
Can you tell us a little bit about what Lighthouse is?
Yeah. So in a Chromium browser, you can open your inspector and you can go to Lighthouse. You can click on the Lighthouse tab and you can evaluate your website for, you know, performance, SEO, accessibility. And I think it just does a basic level of accessibility checking. And like I stated before, like an automated tool can only check for, you know, a certain percentage of issues. But there is a potential to kind of trick that a little bit. And some companies may be implementing strategies in there. I'm not saying that Wix and Squarespace are doing this, but there is a potential to implement a strategy to make Lighthouse scores seem higher than they actually are. So as for Webflow, now Webflow is a very like if you want to design something beautiful, I think Webflow is just amazing and flexible. But really the accessibility is kind of on you for the most part. And I can't speak 100% to what degree you can actually modify certain components to achieve the accessibility that you're trying to achieve. But I think overall accessibility tools and automation within these types of platforms, I think they're increasing. I think these companies are thinking about these things. But I think, you know, 100% true accessibility still requires manual auditing.
Thanks.
Yep.
Jonathan, over to you.
Thanks, Kurt. So you talk about themes, but isn't the reality, Steve, is that we live in the world of page builders, either Gutenberg or non-Gutenberg? And where do you think, because my perspective as a non-expert, but I do have, which I'll go into a bit more detail, maybe in the second half of this interview, Steve, I have got a bit of experience in this area. I sense that a lot of people that are really passionate about accessibility think over the last few years that accessibility under the Gutenberg wrapper has declined. The situation's deteriorated. So, number one, this is going to have a couple elements to this question, but number one is, what's your own view of that statement? And number two, we have these page builders. We have Elementor. I like your opinion of that and how it affects accessibility if you use Elementor. And then you have page builders that are built on Gutenberg technology like Cadence, WP, and Generate Press, which I think are two of the best of a whole quiver of similar type page builders based on Gutenberg technology. I like, in the second part of this question, what's your views of Elementor and some of these other page builders when it comes to accessibility? So I've given you two elements to that question. But I think I've explained it because you're ill. And I appreciate you still coming on the show. I've actually explained my madness to you. Yep. I've given a question that's had four bits to it, Steve.
Yeah. I understand.
Yeah.
So you asked what my personal opinion is with Gutenberg and stuff. So I think a lot of developers that are very, very versed in development have very strong opinions about Element.
Never, Steve.
The Gutenberg block editor. So from a development pure standpoint, we are still building. We don't do a lot of website builds anymore, but we do build our own stuff, right? Like our own dashboards and websites and stuff. And we are actually still building those with the block editor, kind of a hybrid theme, not a full site editing theme, but and we're doing that from a development standpoint. I think in my mind, there's a resistance towards building block themes, right? I'm kind of traditional. I'd rather do it in a way I can control it 100%. I'm a developer. I don't really need that page builder, but our team needs the block editor, right? And our team and our marketing team finds a lot of value in having the block editor, right? So what we've done is we've come along and we've learned how to implement these types of sites. And it is a very, with theme.json and, CSS, writing CSS and JSON, right? Like it's difficult. Can you figure it out? I think so. But what I will say is that from an accessibility standpoint, I think what you were leaning towards was the actual accessibility of the editor itself in the back end is become a problem, right? Or it is lacking in accessibility. There's flyout menus everywhere. There's icon only buttons everywhere. You can't really access everything you need with the keyboard, tabbing through. So I think Gutenberg, for a person that needs assistive technologies and they want to use Gutenberg, I think there's a challenge there for them. I think that the classic editor had some issues, but I think that they were still able to access and use that, fully. Where Gutenberg, I think there's going to be limitations on the back end. But I will speak to the front end of that I will, and I'll tie this into kind of your comment about Elementor and Cadence and GeneratePress. The front end output, when we're speaking about Gutenberg core or the block editor core, right, is not bad. Is the accessibility of that, I think that they're taking steps to make the front end output much better. So, kudos to the Gutenberg team for that. But I think as a development team, you have to be very careful now because the door is wide open. So this goes back to Elementor, Cadence, GeneratePress, right? So like Elementor is a full builder, right? So we can talk about that. So real quick about Elementor is that I think Elementor, out of all the page builders, is the one I would prefer. And because from an accessibility standpoint, Elementor lets me get in there. And for the most part, I can change a lot of things and make it accessible. Like I still have to lean on my accessibility knowledge to do that, but they've at least opened it up to where I can add attributes to elements, right? Like if I need to add an ARIA label or ARIA hidden. So that's my preferred page builder if I was to use a page builder. And I will say that I generally do not ever use a page builder outside of Gutenberg.
Well, I've had these conversations with Kirk about it's driven by the type of agency and it's driven by the type of clients that agency is doing work on a regular basis. I have had these conversations with you, Kirk, not around... He's nodding. So not around accessibility, but around other issues that are properly expressed in the WordPress community. And I've said to Kurt, based on my experience, it's really based on budget and type of clients that agency are working for. So the kind of clients, if you're working for government and higher education, it's a bespoke consultancy building, which is different, I would say, to 90% of the listeners of this podcast, which are probably doing work, either they are freelancers or they're running boutique agencies and they're doing work for small to medium-sized private companies that don't have the budget to build a fully custom solution and go through the whole process of discovery and all the other steps. But that is driven, I say that, but it's a very broad statement because even that type of customer is driven by budget. So that there's overlap.
Yeah.
What's your response to what? And be honest if you feel I'm not.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on. And I think to add some context to this, so we traditionally were a website company before we transitioned over to accessibility. And it's not to say that we won't ever build a website again. It just, if the right client comes along and, like if NASA comes to us and says, hey, we want to rebuild our NASA website. Yeah, we did the accessibility on the current NASA website.
I think they're finished, mate. I think their budget's for the cut. Who needs, I'm not going to go there.
Right. Yeah. So that could change a lot, right? Budget. But so when we did do this, we got to the point with the block editor that we would, we did use GeneratePress for a time, right? And then we're actually to the point now where if we build a block editor theme, we only use core blocks. We don't allow any third-party block libraries.
Can I ask you why you made, before we go for our break, why you made that decision?
Because, like I said, the output of that is generally pretty good of all the core blocks. And we can't control block like GeneratePress. We can't control, we can make pull requests to their plugin, or we can make support requests, right? But it's a little bit outside of our control. So if we need something beyond a core block, we create our own block.
Right.
I will just tag on, not to interrupt, but I will just tag on.
Oh, please do, because I interrupt all the time.
when we build those types of websites that are very bespoke, like you said, I am talking like the $100,000 websites, above $100,000. So like to your point of Elementor has its place. And I think, these bespoke websites have their place too.
Yeah, I'm really, you're the expert. I'm really surprised about you saying Elementor, because the days that I used it when I was building, which I don't anymore, it's changing, Webflow, other technologies, but it was notorious for what I call divoditis. So I automatically presumed that, because in my mind it just, but also a lot of those problems were caused by the temptation to add an enormous ecosystem of third party add-ons that you could add to Elementor. And I think that, and it's there with Gutenberg, but I think especially with Elementor, adding a lot of add-ons really made it a very difficult situation. But if you're dealing with a certain budget, you just code in-house. But I think for the lesser budget, because the budget isn't there and there's always this tension of feature bloat, and not wanting to have a difficult conversation with a client, the temptation is just to go to the third-party world and just add an add-on and then add another add-on, an add-on to satisfy the client wanting extra, ever more features to the website. What's your response to that?
Yeah, I mean, even with Elementor, like what you said about div, right, all the nested divs, I'm not speaking from a performance standpoint. There is a performance implication when you run any kind of page builder that nests all kinds of divs together. You know, unless their buttons are divs when they should be buttons, that's a problem. But So the add-on, I kind of approach Elementor add-ons the same as I approach the block editor add-ons, right? I try not to use them at all costs. And in Elementor, I can create my own, I don't know, they don't call them blocks, do they? I can create my own components in Elementor as well. But that definitely is a luxury of being a developer, right? And from an accessibility standpoint, if you should be evaluating your tools for accessibility, right? We've evaluated the block editor as core block editor on the front end output. It's pretty good for accessibility. If you're evaluating Elementor for accessibility, you should evaluate Elementor. And if you bring in a component in Elementor, you should evaluate that component for accessibility too. Go to that plugin website, look for an accessibility statement, contact their pre-sale support and ask them, hey, have you guys considered accessibility when you built this plugin?
Yeah, I'm grinning at you, not disparagingly grinning, but it's, like I said to Kirk in previous relationship, it's really down to the budget and the world, you know. But we leave it at that. We've had a great conversation. Steve's a champion. He's lubricating himself because he's got a little bit of a cold, but he still came on the show on the right week as well. Thanks for pointing out my madness, Steve. We will have a break and we will be back in a few moments, folks.
Tired of hosting providers that can't handle high traffic loads? Convessio is here to help. Our platform can handle any amount of traffic, all without slowdown or crashing. With immediate Slack support, performance optimization, and a team that thrives on resolving technical challenges, your e-commerce business is in safe hands. Learn more about Convessio at convessio.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Lifter LMS, the leading learning management system solution for WordPress. If you or your client are creating any kind of online course, training-based membership website, or any type of e-learning project, Lifter LMS is the most secure, stable, well-supported solution on the market. Go to lifterlms.com and save 20% at checkout with coupon code podcast20. That's podcast20. Enjoy the rest of your show.
We're coming back, folks. Before we go into the second half, the continuance of the interrogation. But Steve seems to be doing well, though. We've had a great conversation in the first half. But before we move to the second half, just want to point out, if you're looking for a great WordPress hosting partner, a boutique hosting partner that specializes in membership, Buddy Boss, and higher end community focused websites, why don't you look at WP Tonic? We've got some great packages for you, the WordPress developer. You can find more by going over to wp-tonic.com/partners. wp-tonic.com/partners. And we love to build something special together. So over to you, Kurt.
Well, as I think about this question, which is really like, what can WordPress developers do to improve accessibility of the websites they're building for clients, right? That's the core question. But I think about some of the roles I fulfill in my weekly walk. So I consult in the marine industry, and one of those consulting tasks is I actually review websites for marine dealerships, you know, not just for accessibility, but for other things. But accessibility is a part of that, right? And they're not expecting that talk. And you can see the look on their faces, like, I never even thought about a blind person wanting to shop for a boat. As an agency, when I'm selling a web build, I've tried to be like really itemized. Like, these are the plugins. This is the labor. This is an accessibility thing that we can do for you. And then it gets into, to Jonathan's point, budget. And they start going, okay, well, let's take a look at these line items. Do we need this? No.
Do we need this? No.
And then, so then you try to include some accessibility features just in the build, right? Like we're like, you just make it part of the, instead of a line item, you make it part of the thing. But then from the developer side, you have this weird feeling like, did I just make myself liable for this website forever and ever? So what is your advice here? What are some of the key things that a WordPress developer or implementer can do that'll improve accessibility?
Yeah.
Without putting your own neck on the line.
Yeah, totally. So I'll speak a little bit to your kind of sales question, right? And I'll kind of phrase it a little bit like this. And full transparency, I stay away from sales myself. Like, unless, you know, partnerships, I deal with that. Our COO, Chris Hines, he handles all our sales and he's fantastic at that. And he's actually spoken a lot about selling accessibility services. But what I will say is I'll frame it like this, like frame it with like responsive design, right? And does anybody itemize out responsive design anymore? Responsive development, right? No, it's expected. Right? Like, what would it be weird to go to a client and say, well, this is only going to work on desktops. Unless you pay this, then we'll make it work on a phone, right? Or a tablet. And I think accessibility needs to kind of be treated the same, right? Accessibility actually predates responsiveness, and it really should be baked into the core, right? It's, you know, semantics and you know, keyboard controls and stuff. We're kind of there very early on in the web, and then we created CSS and we created JavaScript, and which is kind of, in a way, are kind of elegant hacks to semantic HTML, and they kind of impede on accessibility. So that's kind of how I would frame it, that, you know, responsiveness is just kind of part of our jobs now, and I think that accessibility has to get to that point. But I think there's a second point to that, right? Like, how do we get there? Like, how do we, what can we do? You know, if we don't have big budgets to implement this now, like how can we get started in the educational process and in the implementation process of accessibility? So my suggestion would be start with automated tools. Like I said, they can only do 30, 40%. You know, it depends on the site and the issues on the page, but like, you can only do a subset of the issues. But like, if we were to improve accessibility across the whole internet, or even WordPress, just 43% of the internet, right? 30%, that is absolutely monumental, right? So I would look into some of these automated tools. I've mentioned our tool, the Accessibility Checker, which will scan. And actually, when you scan and it notices an issue, it'll actually say, we have a fix for this, and you can turn that fix on. And then once you turn the fix on, our plugin goes back and scans it again to ensure our fix did what we intended for it to do. Because if you're implementing an automated fix, right, there's a chance that it might not work depending on all kinds of factors. Is there conflicting JavaScript on the page, things like that? But we actually go through and revalidate our own fix. And if it doesn't fix it, it still flags for you as an issue. There's other tools like Wave. There's a browser extension for Wave. You can actually go to the Wave website and you can run like an evaluation on one page at a time. And there's Axe Dev Tools extension that can kind of run accessibility scan in your browser as well. And like I mentioned, like I would validate, like you're building a toolkit for your agency, right? You're building a toolbox of tools that you're going to use. Have a barrier of validation for those tools that you use. Like I said, if you use Elementor, you've evaluated it for accessibility. You've maybe even contacted Elementor and asked them, hey, do you have an accessibility statement? What are the known accessibility issues that still exist? And what are you doing to help the accessibility? And then, of course, like I said, the add-ons. So you almost have you're validating these as part of your toolbox. I know it's so easy to go to that repository and say, I need my website to do this, or I need a block for this. And you search, oh, here's an accordion, install it. And really it's the accordion's not keyboard focusable and things like that. So, and then I think education. I mean, I think education and everything that we do as technologists is important, right? We run the WP accessibility meetup, and you can go to equalizedigital.com/events and you can see upcoming meetup events where we speak on all kinds of topics related to accessibility and to WordPress. I mentioned we have the Accessibility Craft podcast where we talk about kind of accessibility and people like us, like running agencies or micro agencies or solopreneurs, kind of trying to implement accessibility into what we do. So that's kind of where I would start. I can go through some like really granular things if you want me to.
Well, I want to put Chirp in.
Yeah.
Because I know more about this than I should do because, but I don't do a daily. I've got a very major client that I've been working for over 8 years, and they received a letter. I'm not going to give you details because it wouldn't be appropriate, but
right.
It's a large organization and they received a legal letter.
Yeah.
And we did not build the website for them. And I was part of the process as an outsider giving some advice. And I warned them. And my warnings were not, in the end, I wouldn't say listened to, but they were downgraded.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year after almost $200,000 had been spent on this website, they received the letter. The letter is from a legal firm that specializes in suing organizations. This, based on my experience, this is what triggers. And the letter got to the chairman of this organization and then all hell broke loose. Yep. And I got sucked in to this mess and I did okay out of it, but I would have preferred not to have got sucked in.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is the reality. I'm not trying to be negative, but based on my personal experience, this is triggered by the letter. I call it getting the letter.
Yeah.
Is that the reality? Because there are legal firms that are checking organizations that have, you know,
yeah.
No legal firm's going to sue you if you haven't got money.
Right.
So that's the first thing they check. Does the organization have money that we can get our hands on? That, you know, that's what this is what's driven, isn't it? Is these legal firms that sue organizations. Or would you disagree with that? And I'm basing it on my experience.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think it is. I think it is to a degree. It is driven by, lawsuits. I think a lot of accessibility stuff is driven by the need for compliance. You know, if they are a government institution or if they're, a public university, that they're required to do that. And if they have the right people on their staff, those people are pushing for the accessibility compliance. But
I just want to butt in. The other part of this story is that they got rid of their internal IT staff to save money and they brought in a external Microsoft consultancy. And they first went to these people first. And their answer was to use a SaaS-based accessibility service. And I told them, and I'm going to get in trouble using this term, but I think I told them it was putting lipstick on the pig.
Right.
But they were pushing and saying I didn't know what I was talking about.
Right.
And they can just utilize, I'm not going to name because there's a couple of these SaaS-based services. And they say if you use our service, and I've got to be, I'm not attacking your plugin, but they provide plugins that work with WordPress, and they say, and amazing, if you sign up for their SaaS subscription service, it's amazing. As soon as you use their service, the plugins, they say everything's fixed. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's surprising, isn't it, Steve?
Yeah. So without naming names, you're speaking of what's called an overlay, right? And a lot of times overlays come with toolbars. And more recently, a lot of overlays are touting the benefits of AI. Yeah, the benefits of AI in their widgets. And we've all used AI, and we all know AI is great, but we know it gets things wrong a lot. Like
ever.
Yeah. So you're right. They're not the problem with the overlays is their claim. It's the marketing. That's where they get in trouble. They get in trouble by claiming their tool is going to make you compliant. Their tool is not going to make you compliant unless there is a full manual audit of that website as well, right? It's not to say from a technology standpoint that you can't utilize JavaScript to solve some problems. Sometimes that's our only choice because we can't modify a WordPress plugin, right? Sometimes I have to use JavaScript to modify something to make it accessible in a plugin and then submit a ticket to that plugin developer. Hey, I did this. Can you fix it, right? But you would really need a full manual audit. There's no magic bullet. There's no one-click install that's going to make your website 100% accessible. So action for accessibility does get driven by organizations a lot by lawsuits, right? And
well, when they receive a letter from a very large national legal firm that have successfully sued a number of organizations for tens of millions of dollars,
yeah,
and they hit the letter and it gets to the chairman of an organization, all hell breaks loose. Right. It not?
Yeah, when these organizations are putting out their RFPs, they need to ensure that accessibility is a topmost requirement, and they need to have the knowledge or partner with the right company to be able to validate the vendor that they're choosing actually can implement an accessible website in to that degree, right? But I will say too, like you said early on, you tried to warn them, right? Like, I don't know what your full relationship is with this company, but like for us.
Well, we have been doing work for them for 10 years, and it's a major client for me. And and this whole thing, but I had a very strong relationship, and I still do, with the chief financial officer of the organization. And that, but it threatened a sizable part of my income.
Yeah.
And I didn't need it. So this is why I know too much about this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't want to know about it.
Right.
I've got mixed feelings about the whole industry, the accessibility industry.
Yeah.
Because it's just driven, unfortunately, by these law companies.
Yeah, unfortunately, you know, if you go back and listen to our accessibility craft, you're see my opinion a lot about the lawsuits. A lot of times my opinion on the lawsuits is the only people that really make out in the lawsuits are the lawyers, right? The bureaucracies and the lawyers. But a lot of times the money doesn't really make it to that end user that had standing and not being able to use an inaccessible website, right? Or sometimes, you know, it's just crumbs that gets down to that, you know, that disabled user. But I'm always weighing the legal and the ethical, right? I want to be ethical. Like, we should do this because it's the right thing. We're all on a path. We're all on a degenerative path as humans, right? We're all going to need some level of accessibility at some point in our life. Our eyeballs are going to get worse. Our vision's going to get worse over time. Right. So we should be building something not only for, you know, people that with different abilities, we should be building like a future web for ourselves as well. That's the ethical thing to do. We need to educate ourselves in this. Right. The legal comes in and actually does move companies in a direction of compliance. And quite frankly, a lot of times the outcome of that is just fines. It's not necessarily compliance. I would love to see the outcome of those lawsuits be full compliance of their product or website.
Oh, don't get me wrong, Steve. I'm not having a go at you or your
apps.
I'm just pointing out the reality of the landscape. And it's rigged. And I think, I sense you feel like me. It is what it is. And it's just regrettable. But there's lots of things like that. I'm going to throw a more happier question over to Kurt before he has to leave us. Kurt, you can have the next question.
Well, Steve already kind of alluded to AI in his response earlier, but this question really is, you know, in your scope of work, Steve, what are some of the AI tools that you personally use to run your business, and what would you say that the advantage has been to going to that?
Yeah. So which tools? There's a lot of them these days. And it is quite amazing to think that we did this stuff without AI at some point in time. But of course, yeah, I mean, we're using ChatGPT, Claude AI, you know, Copilot to a great degree, right? And from a development standpoint, these tools are fantastic for helping augment our development. And I will say, like, having a team of senior developers on our team and then adding in these AI tools is just like, it's just this rocket fuel, right? Like, I get a lot of people like, AI can use cursor AI and you could just build a whole application. You know, it's like, yeah, I don't know. Like, as a software engineer, you got to have a little bit more of a vision for your product than just, you know, the AI is just going to do it all for you. But I will say that it definitely has augmented our development within our company to a great degree, and it has increased our speed, our output to a great degree. And it just does like things that like you don't like commit messages, like in Git commit messages. It just click a button and it writes my commit message or my PR message. It just generates a PR, and then you can use a tool like we recently started using Coder Rabbit AI. So we submit pull requests to our repository and this AI goes out and it reviews the code and it'll draw diagrams. It'll put a poem on every review, like a little poem about what you did related, kind of like funny related to rabbits. But like,
what more could you ask for? Steve?
I know. So I think beyond that, like, you know, like there are a lot of AI tools out there to generate alt text on your images and for, you know, transcripts, you know, for podcasts and things like that. But I think those tools are good and I think they'll get better over time. But I'll put a little bit of caution that they still require a human evaluation because like we've tested some alt text AI generators and they don't always get it right or they're described a part of the image that's not the subject of the image. So like you could use those things to speed up your development or your writing of alt text, but you still want to really human evaluate that to make sure that what it's describing that image as is accurate. In the accessibility checker, we put together a proof of concept. This is a feature that's not released yet. So you can generate what's called a simplified summary in our plugin. So you write your blog post and then a simplified summary is a summary of your blog post below a ninth grade reading level. And we've written this proof of concept feature for the plugins, like I said, it's unreleased, but it actually utilizes Claude AI to generate that summary for you. And it's based on we use a certain evaluation to give it a grade level, like a ninth grade level and I've found it to be, I've been using it kind of on my own blog, just as kind of testing and kind of dog fooding my own product, but it works pretty well. Like I click a button and it summarizes my blog post and I read through it. I don't just submit it without reading it. I read through it and that sounds pretty good. Make a few edits and hit publish and there we go. So a lot of AI these days and it's very exciting and very scary at the same time.
Yeah. So my follow-up question to the AI thing, and because it sounds like you're someone that has a little more knowledge about not just the tool, but the outcome, right? With the human touch part of it. Have you experienced like an AI downgrade on your content because you're using AI? Or does that not matter in the space that you're in?
Well, I mean, a downgrade on content, you mean like
SEO or Google, you know, Google comes by and slaps your wrist because it's identified AI on your page. But like you're using it as a tool that's adding a summary for accessibility or something. It's like I'm doing something that's the right thing to do and I'm still going to get my wrist slapped. This seems like a...
Sometimes
well, I get lost at...
I hear you.
Yeah.
So from my technical standpoint, like a lot of what we do with AI is validated over and over again before it actually makes it to production. I don't think any code is being dinged by anybody, right? Like, but on the marketing side, I mean, I think our team utilizes AI to help with outlines or things like that. But I mean, you can go to our blog and you'll notice that like, you know, Amber Hines writes a lot of our articles and our marketing content person writes a lot of our articles and they have a voice. And I feel like the articles still have that voice. I don't think AI is being used.
Well, you're in a very specialized field, aren't you? Right. So it depends what your content is pitched at. I think in some ways Google, you know, big surprise, Steve, Google wants its cake and also eat it.
Yeah.
And a lot of content that's aimed at the broader audience before AI wasn't particularly very good content anyway. It was written by content farms offshore. You know, I'm not going to name, there's certain players in the WordPress space that built up very large businesses on very poor written content and using link farms and other grey hat SEO tactics. Right. But it is what it is. It's not a fair world, is it? So you just have to suck it up and try and keep at it. So if you had your own time machine and you could go back and give yourself a little, just have a little 5-minute chat and give yourself a little hint, is there anything you would like to tell yourself? And you can't utilize not coming on this podcast, Sue. That's not allowed. So anything else that you wish you could tell yourself, Steve, in 2025 that could have gone back to the beginning of your career and told yourself?
Well, I mean, I think, so this is actually a hard one, right? Like, but I think the reality of what a lot of us would do doesn't match with like where we are currently, because I definitely would invest in a lot of technology companies. Like, and that would solve pretty much all the, like, that would just make me filthy rich, right? Like, but I'd probably buy a bunch of domain names, right? But maybe on a more practical level, I think professionally, I probably would have obtained an MBA right away and dove into entrepreneurship a lot earlier than I did, or a lot more aggressively than I did. Because you know, I'm kind of doing it, you know, as a little older, you know, I've got a family.
You're a young man, right? You're not. I just do it because I'm unemployable, so But I don't give up. But I don't give up because I don't want to give up. I don't give up because I've got no choice. So I just keep plodding along. All right, then, Steve, we're going to wrap it up. So, Kirk, what's the best way for people to find out more about you, Kirk?
For business, anything that says mañana no más generally leads back to me. That's my tag on X and Facebook and other things. But personally, if you want to make a connection, hit me up on LinkedIn. I'm on LinkedIn almost every day, and I'm the only Kurt Von Annen on LinkedIn, so I'm easy to find. You know, you got the right one.
The Storm Master. Steve, what's the best way for people to find out more about you and also plug your podcast?
Sure. So we have a podcast called Accessibility Craft, where we try a craft beverage and then we talk about accessibility. So we get to have a little drink on a Friday afternoon and have some fun. And I do that with my co-owners, Amber and Chris Hines. You can find out more about Equalize Digital at equalizeddigital.com. You can find me on social. I'm most active on X, but you can find me on
Twitter.
Twitter.
I'm not going to call it. sod it. It's always going to be Twitter.
Right.
They were that prick once.
So you can find me there and on most social at Steve Jones Dev. And I have a blog, stevejones.blog. So,
yeah. Well, I've really enjoyed the conversation. I know it's been a bit of an interrogation, but you dealt with me easily. And we'll be back next week with another great WordPress or SaaS individual. And thank you for your support of the show, Tribe. The show is growing. We're getting more listeners. Thank you so much for your support. And if there's any guests or any topics you want us to discuss, just please contact me or Kirk and tell us what you would like to hear on the show. That would be great. We'll see you soon, folks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening. We really do appreciate it. Why not visit the Mastermind Facebook group? And also to keep up with the latest news, click wp-tonic.com/newsletter. We'll see you next time.